Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way. From design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival. This is Coast to Coast. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Corey Johnson. We're here every day bringing you the latest news in the world of business and finance.
And the most interesting stories in global technology from Silicon Valley and beyond, powered by our more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Coast to Coast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Bloomberg.com. You can also listen to our radio show weekdays at 2 o'clock Eastern only on Bloomberg Radio.
And now we're going to bring in our chief executive of Nutrisystems, Dawn Azier. And also joining us on the phone is our Hall of Fame quarterback, Dan Marino. Thank you both for being here. Much appreciated. Dawn, I just want to begin with you. The meals that Nutrisystems offers to its customers, who makes those meals? Are those meals that you make, or are they outsourced?
We design the meals, so we determine the macronutrient components. But then we have about 30 different vendors that we deal with that create the different products that we have.
And Dan Marino, what is your favorite meal?
Right now, I use a lot of the shakes and the bars, to be honest. We have a new shake that's out. It's a turbo shake for men. Been using that. And, you know, the best part about the whole thing is for men and women, actually, it's just it makes it simple, right? It's simple. You get the food in the mail, you get it, and, you know, the pastas, all that, the shakes, everything. So that's my favorite meal.
Okay. The reason I was going there with the meals is I'm just curious, and maybe, Dawn, you could speak to this, is that in a lot of cases, people are always wondering about the ingredients and the claims that are made about the ingredients. How do you account for those claims, and what kind of evidence-based science is there that the meals are exactly what they say they
are? Sure. So everything we do is scientifically based. So if we make a clinical claim, it's because there's substantiation behind it. So when we say something like lose 15 pounds in 1 month, 7 inches overall, there are supported blind clinical studies that support that. As far as the food goes, we've made a lot of changes over the last couple of years. We've taken out the artificial flavorings, artificial sweeteners, things along those lines to really reflect a lot of the trends going on and what customers are looking for. We also have the South Beach Diet brand that we launched last year, a home delivery program, and that really is focused on something that is very on trend right now, which is low sugar with less than 1% of the sugar being added sugars.
Right. I see you've got men's plans, you've got diabetes plans, you've got vegetarian plans, and you talk about the South Beach plan. Dan, come on back in. You lost 22 pounds doing this. Tell me what else was involved. And I ask it because I do feel like that there's a trend in terms of dieting, that it's not about fads anymore. It's about exercise, eating right among regular food, and kind of being smart, getting sleep, drinking water. Tell me, Dan, what was all involved with you losing 22 pounds?
Well, first of all, I had a friend of mine that went on the diet and lost. He lost like 45 pounds, and I was like, oh, you know, wow, you know, you lost all this weight. How can I get started? And I started and lost 22 pounds. But you're right. I mean, you know, you wanna get on the diet. You wanna, you know, eat the right foods. It makes it simple. But also, you do want, if you can, you know, you want to exercise and drink water, and that should be a part of all of that. But the one thing I will tell you, it does make a difference, and you know, makes a difference in people's lives. It makes them feel better, the whole thing. I mean, from, you know, their family and everybody, when you lose weight, you look good, you feel good, you got more energy, you can work out more. All that stuff is just part of it. So So, I mean, you're right. You hit it right on the head. Yeah. You need to do that.
Dawn, I want you to come in because I've also spent some time talking with Mindy Grossman over at Weight Watchers and, you know, kind of refiguring brands that have been around for a long time. And that she looks at, too, is it kind of more of a lifestyle? How do I make it fit within people's lifestyle so it's not such an onerous thing to do to kind of follow a plan?
Right. And I think, you know, one of the things that we at Nutrisystem do particularly well is I think we cater well to the busy lifestyle. So if you look at our lives over the last 10, 15 years, have gotten a lot more complicated, you know, with a lot of moms, you know, soccer moms, ballet moms, two people working in a household.
I know some soccer dads and ballet dads,
absolutely,
too.
And not enough time to really, really cook. And so a lot of people, you know, going through those fast food places. And I think with Nutrisystem, what we give is balanced. And with South Beach Diet as well, you know, macronutrient meals. And I think we've kind of lost focus on what a real portion looks like. And, you know, with
Hallelujah.
Nutrisystem, we show that through visualization and people then begin to relearn with those tools. So very important. And then to have, you know, make sure you're eating calories that matter. So things that are high protein, high fiber, low sugar. And that's really important. And that's kind of how we design our foods all around that.
What's the churn rate of customers?
Our average customer stays on 3 months, and it stays on the full program 3 months. But one of the things that we've done at Nutrisystem is we've opened up many more flexible options. So when I first came to the company, that was all the customers could do. But now what we have is we really focus on the customer journey. And as they go through maintenance and transition, or I was talking to one of the people here earlier, and they're saying that him and his wife are on it, and his snacks always disappear. I'm like, your kids are eating them, right? So, you know, we have all these a la carte options that people can also do once they lose the weight and they move into maintenance mode.
But you said 3 months.
Our average customer stays on 3 months. Now, if you have to lose more weight, obviously they stay on longer. But what we find also, because for many people, weight loss is a lifelong struggle.
Right.
So we find that people come back. So a lot of our customers come back, and that word of mouth, that recommendation is really important.
Thank you very much for being with us. Much appreciated. Dawn Zier, Chief Executive, Nutrisystem. And our thanks also to Hall of Fame quarterback, Dan Marino.
Thank you.
You're listening to Bloomberg Markets along with Carol Masser. I'm Pim Fox in for Corey Johnson. Give me a job, give
me security. Monthly jobs report from the government. Always a closely watched report. This time around, U.S. payroll gains slowing by more than forecast in December. Wages, though, picking up slightly. And the jobless rate holding at the lowest level since 2000, adding to signs of a full employment economy. Here with what he sees when it comes to today's employment data, Chris Liu back with us. He is senior fellow, University of Virginia Miller Center, former Deputy Secretary of Labor under President Obama, joining us on the phone from Virginia. Chris, nice to have you here with Pim and myself. What do you see when you look at today's data? Should we be a little disappointed that payroll gains slowed by a little bit more than what economists were forecasting?
Well, look, 148,000 is good. It's a solid month, and certainly it's more than the number of people, population growth in this country. I think the challenge is the expectations that the president has set. When you focus on the stock market gains, that probably creates a little bit of, you know, irrational exuberance about where the jobs should be and what the economy is. I think this is probably a better reflection of where the economy is. We are continuing to grow. Wages are not growing where they should be. Labor force participation has basically been flat. So you're really not bringing new people into the job market right now. And the challenge you have right now is at 4.1% unemployment, you would expect to see wages growing at a much faster rate, and they're really not. And I think so for most people, this is a good report, but it's not making a marketable difference in most people's lives.
So you don't think that the tight labor market in specific cities is having an effect on how much companies have to pay in order to retain workers?
Well, no, I think that's right, and there's been some interesting stuff that's come out on that this week. I think the challenge is we, in this country right now, we kind of have the haves and the have-nots. Major metropolitan areas, suburban areas are doing quite well. But to a lot of the disaffected people in this country, those Sanders-Trump voters, this economic recovery has really left many of them behind. And, you know, one of the numbers that I looked at here was the retail trade numbers. And overall, for the year, we are down 67,000 retail jobs. And, you know, in a lot of rural areas in this country, the manufacturing jobs left and the people transitioned into retail. Those jobs are now disappearing. So this, again,
Chris, let me just jump in for a second, because we were talking with Josh Wright yesterday or earlier in the week at iSIMS, and we were talking about the data and whether or not it clearly represents kind of what's going on in the labor market. And he said, what's interesting, though, in terms of the government data, that take retail, for instance, you know, there might be jobs in warehousing where, you know, it's moved from retail storefronts into warehousing as more things go online. And that warehousing data doesn't necessarily show up in the retail data. So we might not be seeing things so clearly.
Right. I think that's exactly. I mean, there is a category of warehousing, transportation jobs. Those were basically flat for the month. But I think what you're starting to see is a shift of jobs in the economy. So in certain areas, people are doing incredibly well, but there's still way too many people that have been left behind in this country.
Can you just expand on that a little bit, this idea? I mean, because I keep hearing this kind of term, you know, many people being left behind, and 4.1% unemployment, a 2.5% wage increase. And I was just looking, for example, in places like Minneapolis or even in Denver or Fort Myers, you have unemployment rates that are near or even below 3%. And you're finding that businesses in those specific areas have to pay more and in some cases have to pay bonuses in order to get the workers they want.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm in Virginia right now. Northern Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C., is booming right now. But if you go down to Southwest Virginia, you can't find a job. And so it is, again, certain places are doing very well, and that's the good news part of this. But there are too many places where we haven't figured out how to bring jobs back, where how you bring back those good construction, manufacturing jobs. So people are kind of – companies that are relocating are all locating to places like Minneapolis and Denver, because that's where their executives, that's where their workers want to be.
It is hard to get a clear picture of what's going on in the labor economy, right? Because you get these statistics, Chris, that come out, and they say things look like we're, you know, pretty much close to full employment. And yet, I know of stories of people who've lost jobs who have great skills but can't find a job. We do talk about these pockets around the country that either aren't, you know, they don't have the right skills, and so they're not being employed. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, you know, there's the glass half full and there's the glass half empty. I mean, on the glass half empty, one of the nagging problems has been labor force participation, which has been hovering in the 62 to 63% range, really for the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. So there's a lot of people that are sitting on the sidelines that haven't come back into the job market. Now, that may be because they don't have the skills needed to compete for the jobs of the 21st century. It may also be because the wages aren't high enough to entice them back in. But you're right. You see in metropolitan areas incredibly low unemployment rates. Wages are growing. And then you see a lot of other places where there's not a job to be found right now.
But at the same time, you have 18 states, and I think it's something like 24 municipalities that have mandated increased minimum wages.
Right. And again, I think that in many ways is the thing that will ultimately lift wages up. It's not these one-off $1,000 bonuses that companies are giving after the passage of the tax cut. I think it's, frankly, those are having a greater leveling impact. I think, you know, what this new Department of Labor does with the overtime rule, it's the expansion of paid leave that will ultimately get people off the sidelines and really move them into a much better economic situation.
Can I ask you, is the Phillips curve, is it kind of broken?
You know, I don't know if it's broken, but I think certainly the economy has shifted. And I, you know, again, when people, for instance, talk about we're close to full employment, I don't really know what that is anymore. I mean, particularly in a climate when you've got 38% of people who are not part of the labor force. And again, the demographics of this country are different.
Yeah.
And so I think we've continued to sort of rewrite what the normal rules of not only the Phillips curve of economics in terms of wage growth. And I think it'll be interesting to see what happens the rest of this year.
And of course, the Phillips curve, the relationship between unemployment and inflation. Typically with low unemployment, you see higher inflation start to creep in because companies have to pay more for all things along the curve, if you will, in terms of putting out goods and services, and that includes paying up for workers, but we kind of haven't seen that. Chris Liu, Senior Fellow, University of Virginia Miller Center, former Deputy Secretary of Labor under President Obama, joining us on the phone from Virginia. This.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
It's Bloomberg.
I'm asking myself.
Let's talk a little bit about deals in the venture capital world. VC investors raised a record amount of money to invest in healthcare startups and put more of that money to work than ever before, pouring an estimated $15.5 billion into fledgling healthcare companies. I want to talk, though, a little bit more broadly about what we might expect in VC in 2018. Maybe it's more healthcare investments. Ajay Agarwal knows a little bit about this. Partner and managing director at Bain Capital Ventures. He joins us on the phone from Palo Alto, California. Ajay, nice to have you here. Healthcare was a big area. It wasn't necessarily some, you know, wow, gee whiz kind of tech companies, but it was healthcare that got a lot of VC money last year. What about this year? What are you seeing already?
Well, first of all, Carol, great to be here. And, you know, I think healthcare will continue to be a very attractive sector given how much of the GDP it is, how much focus there is on cost reduction, improving care, and how much consumers now with personal devices are managing and monitoring their health. I do think, however, as you think about 2018, another trend that we're going to see is the fact that the entire physical world is becoming digital. And as you think about autonomous cars, autonomous trucks, you think about factory floors, machines, everything is going to have a sensor on it. And those sensors are going to produce information about location, about speed, about quality. And that information is going to be used to change how business is done across a lot of sectors that historically have not yet seen the impact of technology. And while you've seen healthcare, which I think has been a laggard, now see the benefits of all this venture investment. You're going to now see this across the physical world.
I'm not going to talk about healthcare because there's something more prosaic, and that could be things like ketchup. And you've got a portfolio. One of your portfolio companies is a company called Forkites. And I wonder if you could just give us an example of how Forkites is part of this smart trucking industry when it comes to Kraft Heinz.
Well, the beauty of Forkites is they provide Kraft with visibility into where all their trucks are. These trucks are all outfitted with GPS systems. They send out signals as to where they are. And FourKites brings all that information together in a single dashboard that the executive team at Kraft can use to determine, is a truck running late? Is there a delay? Is the temperature in the truck the appropriate temperature for whatever perishables we might be shipping? Do we have to let Walmart know that our truck is going to be 6 hours late so they don't fine us? Do we need to send another truck because one truck broke down and that shelf is going to be sitting empty if we don't get another truck out there? And so the impact for Kraft is knowing where their stuff is, improving on-time performance, reducing stockouts, and improving the overall speed and visibility in the supply chain. And again, it all starts with the fact that these sensors have now gotten low cost enough that each of these trucks is instrumented with a temperature sensor, with a location sensor. And FourKites is a software company that brings that information together for these large shippers around the world.
Ajay, how does something like Amazon and their moves, how does it factor in? Because it looks like you guys, too, have an investment in Jet.com, which, of course, was picked up by Walmart.
Well, you know, I think what's happening is that Amazon is now touching almost every major part of the economy. They started in books. They've expanded across retail. They're now in software infrastructure with AWS. They're moving into the consumer world with Alexa. And I think what they have done is really reset the playing field in terms of what consumers expect. Consumers, and now those same consumers sitting inside a business, are expecting that they press a button and whatever they need is showing up the next day or the same day for low cost or no cost. And what that means is that same consumer, when they're sitting inside their business saying, hey, this machine just broke, I need a piece of inventory to fix it, I want to be able to press a button and have it show up the same day. I don't have to fill out 10 pieces of paper and requisition, you know, 40 forms and wait 3 weeks in order to get this machine up and running. And so you're seeing this concept called the Amazon effect, where they've changed what people expect when it comes to speed and convenience, and that's affecting every single sector of the economy. And we've benefited from funding a number of great founders and entrepreneurs that are trying to deliver an Amazon-like experience to different parts of the economy. And it's a huge trend, and we're going to see that continue.
One company that I know that you helped foster and is now public, it's called SendGrid. It went public just at the beginning of, or actually the middle of November. Tell people just quickly about SendGrid and why that may be a poster child for companies we deal with, but we don't necessarily know that they exist.
Yeah, SendGrid is the leading provider of email infrastructure. And essentially, every time an email is sent, and that could be an email from your favorite brand, it could be an email from one of your favorite mobile services, that email gets routed through an entire infrastructure, ultimately to get to your inbox. And SendGrid today is the leader, the market share leader,
right,
in providing that email infrastructure. So even though you might never see SendGrid, billions and billions of emails are sent a year via SendGrid's infrastructure, and they've continued to grow and thrive based on the quality of their solution.
Right, up another 10% already here in 2018. Ajay Agrawal, he is partner and managing director at Bain Capital Ventures. Check out their website for more of their investments. He's joining us on the phone from Palo Alto, California. You are listening to Bloomberg Radio.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Yeah, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
Keep driving, crazy.
Just drive, baby. Drive me
crazy. It's the question that drives us.
Drive the race, take the break. We can reach our destination.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
Yes, the Drive to the Close with Chris Zaccarelli, Chief Investment Officer of Independent Advisor Alliance, helping to manage more than $2.5 billion based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Chris, a pleasure. I want to ask you about cash, because I've read something you put out that says that any significant pullback I'd use as an opportunity to buy. You can't buy unless you have money. So how much cash do you have set aside for that moment?
Well, to be honest, you know, within our portfolios, we have very little cash. We're mostly fully invested across all of our portfolios. Let's call it maybe 2-4% at most cash positions. That being said, for those people who are looking to get into the market, who have been either holding back or who have new money to invest, that's really what we're talking about.
So what would you be suggesting they do? When do they wait for a pullback? I mean, we've got stocks up 2.5% this week. The NASDAQ is up nearly 3.5% this week.
Yeah, the markets are seem to be on a tear. I mean, they're really
Dow is up more than 200 points right now.
Yeah, I mean, the markets are really picking up where they left off at the end of last year. And so that's the tough part. And you know, as we talk to clients, we say, listen, if you you can't necessarily wait for a pullback. And it's a tough discussion because a lot of people who have been sitting on the sidelines even for a couple of years and are only now starting to get interested in getting into the market, for those people, you really have to talk about dollar cost investing and just, you know, putting your money in a little bit at a time over the next couple of months. If you do get a pullback in the middle of that dollar cost investment plan, that's when I'd put it all to work, and I wouldn't necessarily wait, to dollar cost average at that point. But unfortunately, there's really no good answer to the problem. If the market goes in a straight up in a straight line the way it has last year, it's really tough to sit on the sidelines and watch it.
I don't understand. You know, Pim and I were talking about this earlier, Chris, looking at fund flows, if you will. Investors poured the most money in 13 weeks into bond funds at the end of last year, taking money from stocks. This is Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, putting out some research note and citing some data. Overall, investors added $9.2 billion to bond funds, withdrew $4.5 billion from equities. I don't understand. If investors are doing that, are they really that upbeat about what's to come and sitting on the sidelines kind of waiting to just put even more into stocks? I don't know. It doesn't seem logical to me based on the data we're seeing.
No, it's definitely a contradiction, and I think you've really gotten to the heart of the matter. I'd point to two stories that I saw in the Wall Street Journal just today. You've got the one cover story where they're talking about Dow 25,000, and it's moved up those 1,000 points, the quickest you've ever seen. Now, of course, you have to read farther into the article where they point out, well, of course, from 24,000 to 25,000 is
right,
a little bit more than a 4% return versus, you know, 9,000 to 10,000 or 10,000 to 11,000, which is 10%. But the second article, I think, it maybe answers that question, and it talks about how retail investors have largely shunned the rally. And they talk about both young investors who saw the financial crisis, what it did to their parents, and they've just avoided stocks from the get-go. And even those people who are approaching retirement who still feel those scars of 2008, and they're becoming a lot more conservative. So I almost wonder if you're seeing some of those retail investors who are approaching retirement, who are maybe the ones who are pulling some of that equity money out and putting it into fixed income. But keep in mind, the institutional market, completely separate, obviously, from all those retail clients. Retail clients play a part through, you know, 401ks and through mutual fund flows. But those true institutional investors, your sovereign wealth funds, your large asset managers, even your pension plans and endowments, I believe they've been allocating more to equities as we go along. 2018 may be a time when they start to dial back risk, but you know, clearly supply and demand is at work, and equities keep moving higher.
Chris, what happens in the institutional world if you have a money manager who at the end of January has not performed as well as the S&P 500? Dare I say we're a 2.5% increase just this week. Then you're behind the eight ball and you've got to make that up, what, in the first quarter? Because if you don't make it up in the first quarter, it just gets more and more difficult as the year goes on.
I think you're right. You know, and when they use that term melt up, that's exactly what they're talking about. It's a combination of a fear of missing out from retail, but also on the professional side. You know, people are really trying to decide how do they start to exercise a little bit more caution as valuations become more and more stretched. But on the other hand, if they lag too far from their index, if you're a large cap U.S. equity fund, S&P 500 would be your index, or, you know, looking at the Russell 2000 for those small cap funds, et cetera, that's the real challenge. And so I think as you look back over the last 9 years and you're looking at all that flow into passive, and that's what I really think is happening, is you've just seen what's worked well in the past has been passive investing. And frankly, you know, when the Fed prints $4 trillion and a rising tide lifts all boats, of course passive is going to do really well. if active is going to outperform, and throughout history, there's varying degrees of success of that, it's going to have to be when we get some type of pullback, when we get some type of downturn. When we're off to the races, it's very difficult to be an active investor and keep up, and I think that's the heart of the matter.
In the meantime, you're saying, as Pim started this off, you know, that any pullbacks is an opportunity to get into the market. You don't see a recession maybe 1 to 3 years off at this point. So the fundamentals, when you look at this market, when you look at this economy, this says things are okay. Just got about 30 seconds here.
Sure, and I think that's an important distinction. I think the bull market continues to run until we get to that next recession. It's a pullback that can happen at any time. So you can get a 10%, 8%, 12% pullback just because valuations are stretched, something scares the market. As an investor, I'm going to stay invested all the way through until we get to the next recession. And I don't see any signs of a recession, at least over the next 6 months, probably a year. I put 1 to 3 years in my notes just because we don't know if this will continue, because it has for so long. But I really do think if you watch for that inverted yield curve, that's
right.
One of the signs of potentially a recession. And that's what you need to be looking for. So that's kind of the dichotomy between watching out for pullbacks, which there's nothing you can really do to predict it, and staying fully invested.
Chris Saccarelli, thank you so much. Chief Investment Officer at Independent Advisor Alliance, joining us on the phone from Charlotte.
One bad apple don't spoil the whole bunch, girl.
Well, it might not spoil the whole bunch, but it might cost you less to buy one of their batteries. If you have a phone from Apple, have an iPhone from Apple that is using an older battery. Mark Gurman is our technology reporter for Bloomberg News. He joins us from our 960 studio in San Francisco and can be followed at Mark Gurman on Twitter, of course. Mark, go ahead. Give us the short version of the Apple story today, because I want to get to these new augmented reality glasses from Amazon.
All right, sure. Hey, Pim and Carol. So a few things going on with Apple this week. One is the battery situation, where Apple admitted to throttling, basically slowing down older iPhones in a sense to make sure their batteries last longer. Now, instead of paying $80, you'll be able to pay $30 for a new battery from the Apple Store. You swap the new battery in, they do it for you. It goes back up to its original faster speeds. The other story is the chip situation with Intel and ARM and AMD involved, where the chips are having a security flaw that Apple had to release software updates to plug. Now let's jump into AR glasses.
Wait, hold on a sec. Okay. So is everything okay? Because I feel like, you know, Mark Gurman, that this story has come out and it's like, oh my God, all these chips are affected. But you know, we're okay. We've taken care of it. Is that it?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, we're okay until we're not okay, right? Mm. So these exploits are there. Apple's exposed. Intel's exposed. Everyone is exposed, right? But it's only theoretically a problem until the problem arises, until a hacker or someone exploits it. I think it's going to be a cat and mouse game, catching all these exploits as they come out to take advantage of these holes in the security architecture of the chips. And, you know, we'll bring the latest updates if we see any problems arise. And I'm sure as problems come up, Apple, Intel, Microsoft, and Google and everyone else will start squashing them.
All right, let's talk about glasses.
Pim's really excited about this, you can tell.
Well, I know that you got your bags packed. You're ready to go to the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. And I just thought it was interesting because these glasses from Amazon, they're actually made by a company in Rochester, New York.
That's right. And first of all, Pim, thank you for reminding me. I do need to pack. I'll probably wait till, I don't know, Sunday
morning.
Well,
you can buy it all at McLaren Airport. I mean, who knows? I'm sure that you'll be waiting in lines long enough to buy everything.
Yeah. So back to these glasses. So this is part of the Alexa Developer Program, which, if you're familiar with Sonos, popular speaker maker. So they came out with a version of their speaker a few months ago, I believe in October, that had Alexa built in. So you could say, Alexa, what's the weather? Do this and that from the speaker. Now there's another big company. This is a public company called Vuzix, like you said, Pim, based in Rochester, New York. And they are coming out with smart glasses called the Blade. They are coming out by the second quarter for about $1,000 this year in 2018. And what they're going to show for the first time is that these glasses will hook into Amazon Alexa service. So you can have AR glasses. You can say anything to Alexa. And about 90% of the functionality, we're told, from the Echo Show, so that's the Echo with a screen, will actually work in these glasses. So it's basically like getting an Echo on your face. It's quite neat in practice.
Have you tried it?
No, but I am definitely going to get a pair next week in Las Vegas and definitely report back to you guys about how it went.
Mark, what's the expected price on something like this? I mean, is this really going to have mass market appeal?
So at the launch, at the get-go, I don't think it's going to have mass market appeal. It'll be around $1,000. Over time, the company says they want to get these down to $500. But obviously, Apple, Google, Amazon, they're going to get into the market with their own competition. This is where the industry is going. This is the new wave of technology. And those guys will have to bring the price down to a few $100 if they want to take it truly mainstream.
Now, the company Vuzix, I understand it's, what, 30% owned by Intel?
I think they have an investment by Intel in their business. Obviously, Intel does a lot on the VR side as well.
Okay. And they produce not only these glasses for Amazon, but they produce augmented reality glasses for a variety of industrial applications. Is this the kind of thing we're going to see people in warehouses and in factories? They're going to be walking around with these augmented reality visual aids that are going to really kind of remake the way people work.
Yeah, you got it, Pim. I mean, you can imagine a mechanic wearing them while fixing an airplane and getting instructions on how to do that. You can imagine a TV producer who's trying to, you know, arrange the set, getting information about where people need to sit, which guests are next, right in their field of view. So the industrial, like you said, and enterprise applications for smart glasses are pretty endless. It's just about bringing them to consumers, because that's where the true money is at, making these have mainstream appeal. And I think this is going to be the start of that. Alexa is a very consumer-grade piece of software. It's a really tightly integrated voice ecosystem and operating system, but it's very much geared towards what's the weather, call mom, text dad, you know, what's going on Twitter and Facebook, what has Trump said today, right? So I think those are the types of applications that are going to move this toward more of a mainstream product line.
Hey, Mark, how many people have signed up for something like Alexa at this point?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. So Amazon is very rare in terms of public companies in the sense that they don't really reveal numbers of people using their devices. But the most we're able to get out of them is from surveys and analyst reports, which indicate that the majority of the smart speaker products on the market are ones running Alexa. So Amazon is really at the top sort of this kingdom of voice-enabled services. We'll see how Apple fares when it gets into the smart speaker market with the HomePod sometime in the first half of this year. But until every big product maker is in the game, we won't really have a good, you know, hold on who is going to be at the top of this food chain for the coming years.
Interesting story. Thank you very much. Have a great time at the Consumer Electronics Show. You going to buy anything there? You interested in anything specific? Give you 10 seconds.
I'm not going to buy anything. I'll be too focused on coverage. But if I do, I'll let you know.
All right.
Listen, and you told us, I think, right, that CES is back in fashion again, right?
Yeah, we called this a week ago.
Shares of Vuzix, by the way, of Vuzix, the company that makes these augmented reality glasses, up 18.5%. Today.
This company at CES, apparently, Mark told us earlier in the week, is like booked solid at CES. Everybody wants to talk to them.
Symbol V-U-Z-I if you're looking.
Good stuff. I'm looking. I'm always looking. So is Pim Fox. This is Bloomberg Radio.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I feel the earth move under my feet.
You move like they do. I've never seen anyone move that fast.
Shake.
All right, people, let's move like we've got a purpose.
Something's called movers and shakers. They cost a little more, but that name cracked me up.
Bloomberg Markets, Movers and Shakers, with Carol Masser and Corey Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, time for a look at some of your winners and losers, movers and shakers, on this Friday afternoon. I'm Carol Masser, along with Pim Fox. Let's start with the S&P 500. I like to do that. 360 names in the index higher today, 144 lower, one unchanged. Let's talk about Electronic Arts. The number three gainer in the S&P 500 today, stock up 4.85% to $112.39 a share, now up 7% so far this year, and that's on the back of a 33% gain in 2017. What happened? Well, Electronic Arts holder Melvin Capital Management reporting it owned about 15.9 million shares as of January 5th, so a 5% apparently passive stake. The stake includes about 10.1 million shares subject to call options. This is in an SEC filing. So just interesting to see kind of the, I guess, amount of holding, if you will, in the stock. And that gave some more momentum in today's session, Pim.
Are you familiar with Ripple, right? Ripple is another one of these cryptocurrencies.
Yes.
Well, there's a connection between Western Union and Ripple. Shares of Western Union up nearly 6%. Now, this comes after unconfirmed reports said that Western Union plans to use Ripple's XRP cryptocurrency in its blockchain technology for money transfers. The interesting thing there is that RippleNews.tech has gone offline, and the news was reported around 3 p.m. Eastern today. And then shortly after that, the price of XRP, the cryptocurrency, that jumped 20%, and Western Union stock jumped, and not 20%, but at least closed almost 6% higher. So we're going to be watching that. A spokesperson for Ripple declined to comment, saying the company can't comment on rumors or speculation. But once again, shares of Western Union up nearly 6% today.
And for a moment, I thought you were talking about Ripple Wine, but not.
No luck.
No luck. Hey, let's talk about CVS. The fourth biggest gainer, right after Electronic Arts in the S&P 500. CVS shares up 4.4%. CVS Health was raised to overweight from equal weight at Morgan Stanley, as the analyst over there, Ricky Goldwasser, says the purchase of Aetna, quote, changes the narrative and will allow CVS to return to its historical growth profile. Expects two-phase trajectory after the deal closes, starting with accelerating EBIT growth from synergies and new Aetna members in 2019-2020. Starting in 2021, CVS will play a pivotal role in shaping a new healthcare delivery model. So blah, 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 upbeat, if you will, about this stock. And so again, the number four gainer in the S&P 500, not blah, blah, blah. I just meant there's more there. And you know,
No, we got that.
That
yeah. Footnotes. Yes, indeed. Let me tell you about the shares of Apple, up a little bit more than 1% today. These comes even though the company said that all Mac computers and iOS devices, such as iPhones and iPads, they are affected by the chip security flaw that was revealed this week, the chip security flaw revealed by Intel. This is not hurting the shares of Apple. Stock up more than 1% today. They're saying that they have recent software updates for all of the devices, and it includes not only, you know, your iPod, your Mac, so on, but also Apple TV, the set-top box. So that vulnerability is something that they're working on. Shares of Apple up 1%.
Yeah, and we're going to talk to Mark Gurman about that a little bit later on. So we'll get a little bit more on his take and what we're hearing on that front. Tiffany, let me just mention, Tiffany, there was a story on the Bloomberg today that talked about Tiffany. Shares down about 0.2%, closing at 106.57. Stock gained about 34% last year, so had quite a run. Our story says it looks like Tiffany and Company may have given holiday shoppers just the sort of gifts they were prowling for, and that is a sterling silver ice cream scoop or maybe a classy ruler. Apparently both of those products are part of the company's recently introduced Everyday Objects collection, priced at $375 and $450 respectively, currently displayed as sold out online.
I wonder if you could use the ruler to get the ice cream out of the carton. That way you save money.
And get a ruler and an ice
and
cream
an
scoop
ice cream
all at once.
Together.
Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
All right, everybody.
All right.
You are listening to Bloomberg Radio.
All right. It is time to do the volatility index report. The VIX moving lower today. It was down about 0.4%, losing 0.03, settling at 9.18. This is Bloomberg.
All right, Dave, you're up.
Hi. My name is Dave.
Wilson, where are you? Wilson!
Just what do you think you're doing, Dave?
We're going for a price on Wilson.
Open up the door. It's Dave.
Who?
Dave.
Hey, Mr. Wilson!
Dave Wilson back in town, back in our Bloomberg 1130 studio here in New York City. Your stock of the day, Barnes & Noble.
That's right. You want to talk about a company that's been hurt by Amazon.com? Focus on Barnes & Noble. I mean, the bookstore chain's been competing with Amazon since the mid-1990s when they started out as an online bookseller. And the last few years have just been difficult. Data compiled by Bloomberg shows Barnes & Noble sales have fallen every quarter for the past 3.5 years. More often than not, the company has posted losses as well. It's definitely weighed on the Barnes & Noble shares, which trade under the ticker BKS. Barnes & Noble sales for this past holiday season came out late yesterday, and they brought more disappointment. Sales at locations open more than a year, otherwise known as same-store sales, dropped 6.4%. Sales on the company's websites slid 4.5%, and Barnes & Noble expects more of the same this year. The company sees same-store sales falling by a percentage in the mid-single digits. And you put that all together, the company's shares fell almost 14% on the day. They closed at their lowest price in 22 years. You know, they're actually trading, once you adjust for the fact that they got rid of their college textbook business a couple of years ago via spinoff, they are trading below the price at which the company went public.
Makes me sad. I don't know. I love bookstores.
Leonard Riggio still owns more than 11.5% of Barnes & Noble.
Definitely a different time for that company. All right, Dave Wilson, our Bloomberg Stocks columnist. Thank you for that one. Thanks for listening to Coast. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show weekdays at 2 o'clock Eastern, only on Bloomberg Radio. And follow us on Twitter. She's at Carol Masser, and I'm at Corey TV.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code Radio20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.